Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about diseases in your crops and what to consider. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at how fungicides tackle tar spot. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about knee-high by the 4th of July. After that, we'll wrap things up with some cool beans, that's corny, and some current events. With me today is Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilties out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, both with Tilth Agronomy. Have you finished your ark yet?
One of my sons, I said to start building it.
Yes, you have a Noah. Yes,
yes. Yeah. I said this. It is time. I think. Yeah. I don't know.
Have you begun gathering the animals?
I've been bringing him to church on Sundays and asking if he is hearing anything from any other sources. Because yes, it just does not stop.
You've checked his room. There's not like two rabbits, two squirrels. Sure. Like he hasn't started collecting the.
Is that what happens first? Is the animals come two by two?
Start collecting the two by two animals.
The rabbits seem insanely. Just animals in general are out and about and.
Yeah, I mean, we had a real mild.
True.
Winter, mild winter. And so everything seems to be up in population this year. So, including slugs and everything else. So.
Yeah. Good point. Yes, but yes, it feels. Luckily, it doesn't seem like we have had enough insects and armyworms and all the things, but it doesn't seem like it's been like apocalyptic.
No,
amounts.
It's not like widespread. It's pockets, it seems, yes. Like where it's bad.
Yeah. But the rain is apocalyptic. It is a crazy amount.
Yep. Every time you're like, oh, well, hey, we had a couple of dry days here, a couple more. We can maybe get something done. Then how about an inch and a half? How does that sound?
Just the consistency, it is very...
Yeah. It's every few days you get something. Even this morning, before we were recording, we thought, oh, we were going to be safe for a little while, and then a random rain shower popped up, and
it just
like, oh, okay.
It was odd how we were talking about, like, oh, it's not supposed to rain until, like, later this afternoon, and then it was raining.
Yep.
So, yeah, that is kind of the...
Mother Nature heard us. She's like, oh, you're missing the rain here.
You're welcome. I always think certain dates, to remember back to tech days when we were very dry, tech days sort of broke it. So I thought this year, too, like, when you get wet years or dry years, like, some sort of event seems to break it. So I'm like, oh, fair's early this year. Maybe that'll kind of break it. And then we hit 4th of July. Like, maybe that'll be the sort of rain buster. But nope. So I don't know what. And you always kind of hear of, like, maybe new moon or full moon or some sort of moon change period. And those two, as those have gone in past, have not been able to break it.
Little rusty in my French history, but I believe Bastille Day is coming up. Maybe that'll be
that's
the day. I think it's July 14th.
What is that day?
That's a thing in French history where they stormed the Bastille, like one of the French Revolution type deals. Yeah.
July 14th. Well done, Matt.
Yeah. Just looking for any holiday. Like, if I don't know what other holidays are coming up, but that'll be the day. But
even like the moon thing, it's like, when does the moon change again? So that's got to do it.
I don't remember when the next full, like, it's been so cloudy and rainy. I haven't seen the moon in a while.
Well, then what else is say even this pattern does break. Then there's that hurricane coming, Hurricane Beryl.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows what path it'll take, but they always seem to kind of
come
up through
weather,
the Midwest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So just as we break whatever pattern we do have, then...
Especially this, because it's one of the ones coming up through, like, Texas.
And typically hits us, right? No, I thought that was I had a farmer tell me that, like, you know what, we'll just break this, and then that hurricane will come in a week and a half and be here, so...
Throw everything else out of whack.
So hopefully, too, as it hits the place where it really affects, it isn't too bad in Texas and Mexico and everywhere where it kind of seems to be tracking.
Right. Yeah. Did you have a nice 4th of July?
Yeah, it was good.
Did you go see some professional fireworks?
We saw on Appleton's fireworks, which we've tried and had hit or miss, like tried different spots to watch them, and
so you didn't go to the actual like site.
Last year we did that, and okay. I would not do that again. It was a lot of people and hard to get in, hard to get out. Just yep. didn't was and honestly, seeing the fireworks that close, it wasn't any better. If that makes it like
yeah.
So all things was just like we tried it, and this time, somebody else gave us. We're sitting in a spot like, hey, come sit, you know, try here, and it was very good. So that was good. Yeah. How about you, Matt? Did you see any professional ones? I know you always light off.
Yeah,
your own, and I see you have all 10 digits.
Yep,
so
fingers and toes
intact. That was a success.
Yeah, no, we didn't go see any professional ones, but we were we set off a few last night at my parents' house, and then there's always, no matter what, you know, sometimes it's my grandma's house or aunt and uncle's, there's always a few neighbors around that are shooting them up. So the few I shot off, got to see those up close, and then you watch for the neighbors, and you see the ones over the trees, and... what was kind of unique was it was probably a mile and a half, 2 miles away. There was a guy setting some off, and then they set off or were lighting those paper lanterns, like the
oh, like you see in the Tangled Disney
yes,
movie. Like the,
my sister began singing a song from Tangled.
Nice,
yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a they were kind of going up, and first it was like, oh, there's like three or four.
At first, then did you even know what? I feel like at first you're like, what even is that?
It was so slow. Yeah, yeah, it was like an orange light
yep.
slowly moving up, and then it was like 20, and we stopped counting, but it was quite a few. So I don't know if somebody got them on sale somewhere, and there's like, you kids keep lighting those lanterns.
Right.
I paid for these. You get them up there. But yeah, it was a pretty steady stream of lanterns then for a while. But yeah, I didn't hear of any local incidents. I know here in town, coming home last night, there were a few aerials going off. So
that is kind of the fun of, like you say, especially a country show like that where you got other neighbors shooting them off too.
Yeah,
it's kind of it is neat. Do you do more? Do you still do their mortars? Right, is what they call when they're like the ball, and then but now everything goes to those cakes where you got like I've heard this year the most commonly sold one shoots off like 50 some, and it's almost like one show in a box now, you know,
yeah.
that you can just and light one fuse. And
I've gone to more of that. Like I used to, yeah, buy the individual mortars and then set them off. And but then you got to have the tubes, and because I would save tubes over the years and get a whole bunch, and then you could light more off at once. And but now I buy the pre-packaged, like sometimes they're a mix of aerials and like different heights and stuff. So, but yeah, you can, if you really want to, excuse me, spend money, and fireworks have progressively gotten expensive like every year. It just seems like the price keeps going up. But the guy ahead of me at the fireworks store bought like $2,500 worth of fireworks. And it was enough. Believe me, like he was buying these like $200, probably like 100 shot fireworks and stuff, but it for the amount of money he spent, it did not seem like all
that much
of fire.
Sure, it wasn't right.
like it was a lot, but it wasn't like
no, you'd picture just like a heaping
right
cart full, multiple
like it easily carts. Fit in the back of his truck.
Yeah,
it was not a right. like he didn't have to have multiple vehicles. Yeah, so somebody was having a good time, but no,
I have heard that they've said that fireworks are recession proof, which always like makes me laugh when people claim that, and then you read
about all the firework, there was a couple that canceled, some postponed. Like
more so, and that was the consumer based,
right?
Really,
yeah.
That people are still going to want to like light stuff on fire and
yep.
have some
yeah.
fun. So yes,
and yeah, you want to be safe about it, and I always try to be, you know, make sure level surfaces, all that kind of stuff.
You tape
so we don't
them
have
down
accidents.
Or like get them.
I had a couple like bricks to kind of
sure, just so they don't
just
chip
to
over,
keep them from moving.
Yeah.
Sometime in the last 10 years, I did have one tip over once, and luckily it was away
from the crowd,
from everybody. And, yeah. But yeah, and then it was shooting into the open field. But yeah, I always try to find a pretty level spot so that it doesn't happen. But yeah, it's fun. It's kids enjoy it. The adults enjoy it. It's a good holiday for everybody.
Even in the egg world, I always feel like 4th of July, which not necessarily this year,
yeah.
but it always does kind of mark you've got you know, some years it could be Father's Day marks, you're done with planting and, you know, kind of got that first batch done. But in general, 4th of July always did mark, you know, this.
Yeah, it's like the middle of summer.
You can somewhat take a breath a bit in the farming world and in just, it's a different pace, which is nice. Yep. And like you say, 4th of July is, you know, you got fireworks shows, usually the weather's good, so you can do some outdoor kind of stuff, you know, with family, and it's always great. What was the coolest name of the firework you got? The names of them always are fun to me. Like,
one was Inferno, that one was pretty good. And then the last one I did, the biggest one I bought, was called Taste the Rainbow.
Taste the
Yes. So, and it was all multicolor. Like,
did you eat Skittles while?
I did not. I should have.
Did you hand out bags of Skittles to the?
Well, and my son was telling everybody about that one because that was the bigger one. That was the one I was saving for the end. And like they thought he was joking that that was the name of it. But yeah, no, it really was called Taste the Rainbow. And so it kind of made like a rainbow of different colored fireworks as it was going off. So. That's the thing, like, with fireworks, too, is some of them tell you, like, the number of shots, like, how many things
Right, that's kind of what they're rated, yeah.
And now, like, I noticed that this year, more than I have seen in other years, like, they have, like, this whole little rating thing, like, it's vertical, it's how high does it go.
Okay.
Like, so it'll tell you quite a bit. And sure,
because that's true. Some of those, say, the number of shots could just be, like, a bottle rocket. Going up and popping, you know,
right?
Like,
yeah, they're little.
You know what I mean? Like, not that, but whoop-de-doo, or that's not as big of something that goes higher, goes wider, or something like that. That is interesting.
But yeah, and some of them are fast. A lot of them now too have QR codes on them, so you can watch.
Oh yeah,
like a video of it of before the, you buy before it, you buy which it. Is kind of cool. Nice.
What's the grams mean? Obviously, more is just it's the probably the amount of.
Yeah, I think it's how. How much it, like, explosive force or whatever to send it.
Okay. More is better, but you just want, like, what, do you remember what typically you're getting for grams and?
I want to say, like, 200 to 300, something like that.
Okay. Well, here you go. Taste the Rainbow is 500 grams, but, so the finale is bigger,
Yep. And some of them whistle, like, the one I got was a lot of, like, the falling, it was the Willow Waterfall or something it was called. And so it was like the falling ones where they kind of hang in the air.
That
for is, a little bit.
Yeah, that's cool. The ones that crackle are always neat.
I didn't, and not that I was intentionally going for it, but I didn't get a lot of really loud ones this year. There were a few that would like zip, like.
Yeah.
But no, none that were like huge loud bangs. Sometimes when you're right there setting them off too, it's like.
Sure, it's louder. Yeah. Do you play music during your show?
I do not. It's not that fancy. Sometimes some of my aunts, uncles, cousins will buy stuff and I'll set those off. And that's usually more of the wild card. Like, I know what I bought. But when the other people bring it, like, hey, you want to set this one off too? Like, sure. That can get a little tricky.
Right.
A couple years ago, I had one of those where it was just this little ladybug. You know, it was probably 4 or 5 inches wide. And I thought it was like one of those little tank type things where it would just like spin in place and go. And so I set it off and didn't realize there was like a little thing to launch it into the air underneath it.
Whoa.
And there were, so I light it off and step back and it's like spinning and sparking and all of a sudden, zoom, up in the air, goes over the house. Okay.
Means it made it over. That's like, good. Yeah. Take, straight into the house.
Take the rest of these a little further away.
Yeah. Now.
But yeah. No, that's. I prefer setting off the ones I know that I've bought because I know what I got.
I never thought of that with fireworks. That especially like if you can watch the video, that's neat.
Yeah.
Knowing what you have before you just. Go shoot it off. Yeah, I could see that being a very important safety part of fireworks.
Yeah, exactly. But it was good. Good day for the weather held up nice. I mean, they were originally talking rain earlier last night, and it just kind of held off, which was good.
What's odd is some fireworks shows did postpone.
Right.
You know, anticipating what the weather was, and then probably didn't have to. And
right.
And I'm not sure when they postpone to. It's probably going to rain then. So, yeah, it's always...
Yeah, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah.
I mean, chances are, I mean, if they've bought the fireworks, they're going to want to set them off at some point.
Yes.
So hopefully they'll find a good night.
It was also, they had fireworks at the fair this year, so that was an interesting...
Yeah, no, I could hear those.
We went out and watched them, and those were better than you would have thought for what they were playing. Yes, they were
nice.
They were as good as any other sort of show. So I'm not sure if people watched them from the grandstand, but it would have been really neat to, like, on some of the fair rides.
Oh, yeah, be on the Ferris wheel or something.
Right,
watching
while
them
it's going. So it was a neat concept.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready to get into our topic for today?
Yes.
So this year, with the excess moisture, means that there's potential and humidity that we've had for disease to move in. And, you know, last year we were relatively lucky with the dry weather that we really didn't see a lot of disease. I mean, there's still some diseases that can come in anytime, regardless of wet or dry, but just wetter years tend to be higher disease instance years. So, what do we got to talk about with diseases?
So today, wanted to kind of get ahead of this and talk about your disease plan. And as we get into July here, and 4th of July, that marks a good time to kind of think about it. Now, your disease plan started already, you know, last fall when you bought seed, you know, when you made decisions then and what you're going to do. And then we get into the season, and then your disease plan does need to shift. So this is like kind of maybe halftime in your disease planning, where we saw how the first half went, and you go, yeah, so far the first half looks like we're getting our butt kicked out there. Potentially, you know, the diseases could be out there. We got to think about them. Like you said, last year in 2023, kind of at the halftime of disease, that I had a lot of conversations of even guys that had planned a fungicide or to do something. We just didn't do it, or we pivoted then, and we still applied some fungicides, but it was different. Now, like I said, this year we're talking halftime disease plan. So, you know, in the off-season disease plan, you should have been thinking about looking at picking, you know, varieties that are you have tolerance or resistance. You should have been looking at other things like what, you know, maybe pricing out some fungicide and having a plan that way. So,
or even disease history of the field. Have you had instances there before? That maybe pertains more to soybeans, but corn residue can carry over disease too.
Both that too starts with sometimes you do use tillage as a tool if you try to change residue and bury residue. So, so all that stuff is important in the off season. And that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the in-season disease plan. So like I said, it is halftime. Just the way it feels this year, we're down probably a lot at halftime. We're doing okay. You know, maybe there's some promising things, but we're definitely not maybe winning. So let's make it so that disease doesn't make, you know, what, you know, make either good corn bad or bad corn worse is sort of our game plan with disease. So three things to think about too is the disease triangle. And so
it's always a triangle.
Yes. Apparently it's
always. There's fire triangle, there's disease triangle, Bermuda triangle.
So this one has the three things that you need to get disease. So on other years you maybe didn't have all three, you just had one of the three or two of the three, and you need all three. It's not like, well, if I get two of these and I don't have one, well, I'll still get it. No, it's you need all three.
You hopefully always have the first one.
What's the first one?
The susceptible host. You planted a crop.
Well, right. But there again, hopefully it isn't susceptible.
Maybe you hope it's not susceptible. But,
But if you know, like, maybe the disease rating isn't as good. But yes, you hope you have a host, I guess.
Yes. You hope that part's in place. And this year, that's not always the case.
No,
but
you may not even have that part. So the first one, like Matt said, is a susceptible host. The second part of the disease triangle is a pathogen present. And the third part is a conducive environment. So the pathogen present, you know, that one can be tricky because in general, I don't want to say pathogens are always present, but it depends. If, like you said, Matt, if you have a disease history in that field, obviously it's present, especially when it comes to white mold and soybeans, especially for that one. But other ones, it's, you know, obviously that pathogen has to somehow have moved into the field and be present. What is hard with that one is it's hard to tell if that pathogen is present or not until it shows itself.
Right.
So some of them you could kind of tell with white mold. Again, you'll get those
sclerotia.
Yeah, sclerotia. Thank you. Sclerotia that sort of show at the soil level, and you can kind of see those, and you say, okay, well, those are going to produce spores that maybe, but not all diseases are like that where you can actually sort of scout for it and see it. So a lot of times we end up looking less at that part of the triangle. I would say that one's the hardest to, until you see it, obviously, then you know it's present. So you might see a low incident, then you know, okay, it's for sure here, obviously, because I see the disease. But we try to use the other two to kind of estimate it. So the other one would be conducive environment. And that one, like you said, it tends to be more in wet years.
Yep, this year seems to be one of conducive years.
Yes, high humidity. We always thought hot temperatures in general, but not always. Tar spot we're finding doesn't always like just
Actually, real hot. A little more mild than... Yeah.
Which is somewhat surprising. So as that comes out, if tar spot could set the thermostat, it'd put it in the high 70s and high humidity. And that's be what it would like. So, which for us in Wisconsin and somewhat through the Midwest, but we in other parts of the Midwest, we've had high heat. But in Wisconsin, I wouldn't call it, that it's been too hot or too cold. But it's when it has been hot, it's been the humidity that's been more bothersome than the heat itself. So like I said, for a lot of diseases, the environment's been extremely conducive. The other part with this year is why is 2024 favorable? Is it was a very mild winter in 2023 through 2024. So overwintering is going to be better with things, and it just was mild. So.
Yeah, and we've seen that with a lot of different things, like even things not related to disease, like weed suppression, cover crops that normally don't survive, even the wildlife that are feeding on our crops this year. There's more deer. Like, it just mild winter opens up a lot of doors.
The next door that seemed open obviously is the high rainfall, haze, humidity. There was even one day I was out with a seed salesman, and he's like, "Is there wildfires again?" And there was that day where there was. It was just the haze of humidity. Yep. And like, I think it's just that humid.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh man, it's gonna be hot today." It was like earlier in the morning, and it's just been obviously when you get that much rainfall, the humidity's. It kind of a two-edged sword. Is obviously humidity is what even brings in rainfall, and then once after it rains, that water seems to kind of push up and move diseases around, and just all things with being a wet season.
Yep.
And then, like I said, the moderate temps. So those kind of three factors make it very favorable. Now, like I said, there's a disease triangle, so that the only thing that changes is the having the basically the conducive environment. So a lot of that has to do with weather. It has other things to do with it, but a lot of it has to do with the weather. So when you look at that part of the disease triangle, we definitely have a conducive environment.
Yes. Yep.
So that leads us to, are we seeing it this year? And, we're kind of are seeing early infections in other states in the Midwest. So, headlines from June 12th already. So that's staying near a month.
Yep.
That... They found tar spot in Illinois, and basically it showed up in Missouri in mid-June on corn. So kind of seeing it all over. One of the maps to really watch and is a really good site is the Crop Protection Network. So it's cropprotectionnetwork.org. And it's kind of a joint collaboration between different universities and just has a lot of good other information on it on this Crop Protection Network. But one of the one is just the tar spot map itself.
Yeah, so it looks like Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, a little bit of in Wisconsin, Ontario, and Nebraska.
So my favorite part of this map right now is the Wisconsin one. It's showed up in Pepin County on July 2nd. It almost looks like a Pepin County looks like a check mark. So it almost looks like we just got like...
Or a square root sign.
Right, or square root. So it's like this tiny, interesting little sliver of a county up in the corner, but it's sort of, that tells you it's here. if we're in, obviously we've been looking for it all week just to try it. Once we heard that it was in Pepin County,
yep.
It was like, okay, you know, and Pepin County is straight west of us. It's not like it's further south or anything like that.
Yep.
So there's a good sign, you know, if somebody found it in Pepin, it's sort of somewhere else. But yeah, and then for it to show up in Michigan, kind of in late June, that's early as well.
Yeah.
And then Ontario, basically, this one says first report date on July 5th. So it's literally just entering into Canada right now.
Right
so,
now, yep. So crossed the border.
Yes,
Canada. We failed to close the border. Tar Spot has crossed the border.
We need to secure the border a little bit better, apparently.
The corn transmission is moving. But yeah, it's been, what, like 3 years ago, I think, was the bad year that we had. Like,
what has been interesting about Tar Spot is it has had these sort of ebbs and flows, which all diseases do, but there's years where it was bad, and those years seem to correlate to it coming in early.
Right. Yeah, the years where it hasn't been bad, it's like, oh, we find it late August, like we're taking silage in a few weeks, big deal.
Because one of the hard parts, the end of season maps kind of always shows, I don't want to say everywhere getting it, because it's not exactly true, but in general, it shows most areas having
high,
it.
High potential.
Right. Yeah. And sort of like 2018, 2019 were the first really tough years with it. What is odd is Illinois, odds weird, but in end of 2021, end of 2022, Illinois did not actually have that much tar spot. And then you look at the map for this year as well, and it's on there in two counties, but you'd think it would be more counties than just two in Illinois.
Yeah.
So, you know, Iowa's got a whole bunch of counties, Indiana.
Well, and what's funny, like Wisconsin, Ontario, even Illinois to an extent, is their individual counties, whereas a lot of the other states, there's a joining, like, it's almost like a pattern of joining counties that are,
right.
Like, it's traveling in sections. And then there's a big gap in northern Illinois. Like, there's nothing.
Yes, yes.
It's pretty much south of the Iowa Illinois border line, kind of there is where it's occurring. So diseases don't have to follow any particular patterns, I guess. I mean, they have the potential to happen anywhere in these areas, because that's another thing this map shows is the where it's been found in previous years. So it gives you an idea of kind of the known past occurrences and pretty much all of Wisconsin. I mean, there's a handful of counties way to the north that haven't had it. Minnesota's along the Wisconsin border and Iowa border, pretty much all those counties. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to have it, but the high potential is there. So we got to keep looking for it. And I know you and I have both used an app out of that UW helped develop for monitoring tar spot potential, and that's the Tar Spotter app, which has been a good one. I mean, Sportcaster, Tar Spotter, a lot of these apps that are pumping out.
These are game changers in the world of disease and scouting, because scouting for disease is really tough, because you can't, like we just talked earlier, you're basically, once you have the problem, you're trying to kind of,
you're playing catch up.
Yeah, yeah, you're behind the game already. So, and a lot of these aren't curative; they're preventative fungicides. So, by the time you find it, throw a preventative on. It still works. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it's just a game that way that's hard to play. Where we're getting more tools now to be more proactive instead of reactive.
Yep.
And Tar Spotter is kind of the perfect app for that. So, one of the big key things that seems to be coming out with this app is, in the weather model, is over 75% humidity seems to be a really thing that pops up. I ran it this morning. I ran it a couple weeks ago for, you know, Tilth World headquarters, and it was at a 95% risk. However, I did trick the app. It does ask you if your corn is within V10 to R3 stage. So if you have smaller corn than that, it it really isn't going to recommend a fungicide or anything. You know, it's kind of too early. I mean, you can still get infestations and find it, but it's just rarely a problem. You're not as canopied. You got more air through. It's just a little different. So one of the things, so today I ran it again. I would say we have some corn around that's V10.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not,
no, I've been in corn that's yes. V10. Yeah.
So it's plausible that your corn is V10. And today it was a 74% risk. And basically in the model, you can change the active threshold of when you're going to spray, but their recommendation is above 30% risk, then you should spray. I know when this first came out, the risk was 40%. So I think they've been trying to figure out where that dial has to be. So there's sure. a little play in that, but that's okay because I think it depends on your scenario. You know, if you've got a very highly resistant variety and no history of tar spot, maybe you can wait till the active threshold's higher. If you've got a, you know, extremely susceptible host and you've had tar spot before, maybe then you probably should be going at 30% or maybe 20% chance. So I do think that this app has just been a extremely big help to me to know whether or not my, you know, giving advice on or recommendations on fungicide is valid, because you can at least bring up the app and say, yep, this is your chances of getting it. I think this is a good idea to use it.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing with fungicide is, like you said, it's mostly preventative, not really curative. And a lot of times the analogy I use is thinking of it like insurance. Like, you have insurance on your car, not in Wisconsin, legally you have to. But, you know, it's not that you think you're going to get into an accident or that you're a bad driver. It's the potential's there. It could happen. And some years it's more likely than others. Like if you're driving in certain cities where you're in heavier traffic, obviously there's a higher incidence of having an accident than if you just run back roads around here, you know, in rural Wisconsin. So it can be hard to want to pull that trigger. You know, there's expense to it. It's not one of our cheaper potentials, but there are options. There's a range of prices. You know, you don't have to go with the highest end multi mode of action necessarily all the time. Changing up modes of action is good, just like with herbicides. So it's not a one and done conversation. It's a long conversation. It usually goes through the whole season. Like, you start out, I'm going to do fungicide because I have BMR, whatever your reason, or I'm not going to do it. And if we get a year like this where, okay, potential's high, you have the conversation again now, and you'll have it again, because realistically, most of the corn fungicide that we're going to do is going to happen at tassel. Some guys will do it at that V10 point, and I think that's why the tar spotter starts there. And I've seen Damon on X commenting, like, you know, you might be tempted to do it earlier than that, but as from what the research is showing, I guess there's not really a big benefit to do it before that V10 timing anyway. So
that's very helpful to know, because I think there is times where you're just like, well, you know, earlier is better, obviously, but if you're putting it out there too early, you know, the right time is better. You know, the piggyback word gets used a lot, like, well, I'm going to be going doing
Y drop or something.
Right. Yeah. Or I've got, maybe there, I got a, you know, some farms, one this week we have V8 corn yet, and he was going to kind of do one last cleanup or roundup for some grasses, and was like, well, maybe I'll throw fungicide in right now. And what's hard is the fungicides we had found were pretty pricey. So it's not necessarily a bad thing because you're piggybacking a little bit, but with the price you're investing in it,
you want it to be as effective as possible.
Do it at the right time.
Yep.
So again, this app is, both this one and the one for white mold, which is Sporecaster, are things that you and your agronomist should have conversations about. And what's nice is you can put in, you know, a couple fields on your farm and hit refresh, and it'll tell you, and kind of, you know, every day or every week you can get an update of like what your plan is and how you're going to attack it.
Yeah, and this year will be the year. I mean, hopefully we will, experience a dry enough period that you can use ground rigs, but more than likely it's going to be aerially applied fungicide this year the way it's looking. So
I think your year of the drone, Matt, that you've kind of called was a prediction towards this, and I do think that is something that is going to be more active is planes,
is
and,
planes
drones.
And drones. Yeah.
Yep. And just in general, that opens that window up too, which is nice. So what's neat, we're at a somewhat of a good perfect storm here, is we got prediction tools now to help us, and we've got tools to actually get the job done.
Yep.
Whereas before that was hard, like, okay, well now I gotta, we couldn't predict it, so it was always sort of chasing it. So now we can predict it a little bit better, and there's more tools that you don't have to, like, oh, I'm going to get a hold of a plane or line this up or that up. There's more people to line up and more people to get the job done.
Yep.
We do have even just taller sprayers than ever before. You know, not ever before, but, yeah, a lot of these are very high clearance sprayers that can get through, you know, especially at tassel corn.
Instead of these skinny tires, we'll have to go with the pontoons this year.
Yes, but, actually, that would be sweet. They can just have, like, a little jet ski.
A 28-inch wide ski that they could ride on. Yeah. Maybe a canoe. I don't know.
So some things to consider on the late planted corn. So you might have, you know, a quarter of your farm's early planted, quarter's middle planted, half of it's late planted, whatever, however it ended up shaking out.
All of it's late planted.
Yes.
You know, whatever.
But one thing to consider on the late planted corn, I guess I should define late planted. It would be technically after June 10th would be late, maybe even June 1st-ish. But we had a lot of corn in our area go in that stage. So not all of it.
Yeah.
But one thing to think about is how much yield are you protecting? So you might have, especially some of that early planted June corn, still might yield well, and you're protecting quite a bit of percentage of yield, so that's good. But one thing to consider is yield. So if you're worried about diseases on your very late planted corn that's planted June 15th, you might just roll the dice and say, you know what, it's going to get disease. Maybe I'm not protecting as much yield there. You know, you're not protecting 200 bushels of yield. You're protecting maybe 120. Well, you're better off investing it on the earlier planted corn, probably.
Yep.
So that's something to consider, though. Consider growth stage and when the diseases come. Like we just talked, tar spot especially does seem to like, you know, our Midwest July and August weather. In September, it can like it, but maybe not as much. So maybe the late plant corn is a little safer. But even that, I mean, you're going to be tasseling later. It's just different. And then you do, on a rainy, wet year like this, one of the things to consider is to check your rain fast period on fungicides. A lot of fungicides are 4 hours rain fast, which to be honest, shocked me, because I, for some reason, my head is like an hour, and then I'm looking like, holy man, this one's 4 hours, 4 hours. Like, so some of these, you get, like we just talked about this morning where we were sitting here, Matt, where you had a pop-up shower.
Right.
That you do have to watch that, of trying to get it on 4 hours before it rains. So that is a tougher thing to do on a rainy year when,
well, and it seems there's a lot of herbicides there that too that we've struggled with. And you and I, a few days ago, had that conversation of like, sometimes guys don't realize the rain fast timings of what they're spraying. And you really need to be, because, oh, I got done and then it rained. Yeah. It's like, that's still not good.
No. So check in that, check in your weather, you know, knowing that on a kind of wetter year is good. So let's wrap it up, Matt, with like what to do right now. So like you said, we're at halftime, you know, we're in the coaches are
huddling.
This
is the pep talk we're getting in the locker room now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, sure.
All right, coach.
Yeah.
What do we got? Coach, come on, coach.
Coach speak, yeah. Coach speak would be tough in the pep talk because it'd be, you know, it'd be like, I don't know that we're in the season where we could just chew each other out, because we just are working our ass off out there and still getting our butts kicked. So I think it would be, you know, like, you know, stick to the plan, guys. We came into the season strong. We knew what we were wanting to do. We came into the game. This is the main game plan, but here's where we got to pivot, is we got to check our variety ratings. So I want you to go out there and I want you to look at all the ratings of the varieties, where you're at, and then rank them and say, you know, you're going to have some varieties that are probably be just fine. They're very tolerant. So some of our plays in our playbook, we're still going to run.
It's not on our seed tag, though, is it, Coach? We got to look in the book.
You got to look in the book.
You got to be in the playbook. Yes, in get the playbook out. Right. The playbook that is now buried on your desk somewhere yes. that you didn't look at since last September because that's when you bought your corn.
Right. So get out the playbook. So and the next thing we got to do is scout. So we got to be checking out there. So have your agronomist, have whoever scouts your fields be watching for it. So we're going to put somebody on the other team's sidelines listening for their plays, man.
So we want Clint Eastwood from Trouble with a Curve, not the other guy, right?
Yes. Okay. No, you're right. This is, the book rating's the Moneyball part or the guy.
Yes, that's the Brad Pitt Moneyball. Yes. Now we're into Trouble with a Curve.
Right. Yeah. We want the guy that can tell just by the hearing the bat swing whether or not this is going to be good or not. So be checking your fields. What do you got out there for diseases? Are they there or aren't they? Again, like we said, it's not perfect, but that's where the apps come in. So okay. This is the Moneyball part.
All right.
So we also got
run the apps.
So Guitar Spotter on your phone.
Some mozzarella sticks, cheese curd. No, wrong app. Sorry. You're talking about application on your phone.
Yep, we could do appetizers. I like that. And then the last part is we're also going to have to call in, this is the time to talk to the sprayer guy. Especially if you think you're at all going to maybe do it, you talk to him now so that we're ready. So this is you're talking to your quarterback and tell him about, hey, we might have to run that one play. Do you remember the one play with the Hail Mary and
annexation of Puerto Rico? Little Giants reference for you right there.
We might have to pull out all the plays in the playbook. And some of you already talked to your sprayer guy. But the ones that haven't, you probably do maybe you're not even 100% sure you're going to do it, but it's a maybe. If at all it's not even going to happen, then don't even go down this road because you can't do it anyway.
Right. Well,
have the plan there.
If your sprayer guy's only got a ground rig, you may have to,
Right.
Have the talk hey, you're my guy. I want you to know you're my guy.
No, and at Tassel.
But right now. We're putting you on the pine pony for a little while.
Right. But you are my guy. We're going to need you at the end there to come in. It's like your reliever, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Wow, I feel like we jumped around.
We did. We've referenced a lot of sports movies in the last 30 seconds here. But
that got a little crazy. It was fun. Yes. Yes. But yes, so you and even with drones, some of you have a drone guy, but most of you, when I say you farmers, do not have a drone guy yet.
Yep.
So it would be finding a drone guy potentially and knowing, can he even do it? Can he get to your farm?
Right. Does he have time to do your, because, single drone applications, they take a while.
Yes.
I mean, obviously they can go, we don't want rain. We've talked about that. Rain fast, 4 hours and a lot of things. But, ground moisture doesn't matter as much. So there's a bigger window for them to operate, but. And thankfully, this year, the corn, if you have late planted, early planted, you've got enough staggering there that should hopefully work in your favor this year with that, as opposed to other years when we got to do all the corn.
All at one time.
All at one time.
Yeah. This is a very good idea. I actually had not thought of that. But we will have a fungicide application window potentially that's 6 weeks long of the different planting. So, yeah, there's your pep talk.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Yeah.
Now show me the money.
We're going to go.
Got to get one more in there. All right. So there you go. That is a look at how to make your fungicide plan, thinking about whether your host is susceptible, the conducive environment, which we seem to have, and scouting for that present pathogen. So keep it in mind as we move into the later part of the season here. Now we'll go into our spotlight for today. So how do we time fungicide applications to best tackle tar spot? Well, it might be time to brace yourself for a heavy summer of tar spot outbreaks. According to IPM Pipe, an online pest management mapping system, nearly 20 counties across 4 states have reported fields with tar spot by mid-June. So timing fungicide is going to be critical for the year. The disease is something that we don't want to get out of control. We've seen the damage it can do. So we've got to get out. We've got to scout. We've got to look for the disease. Some of the lesions can be hard to find. I know personally I like to do the rub the leaf test to make sure it's not fly poop, because it does sometimes look like fly poop. So yeah, you got to make sure you're out there looking for it, like we talked about in the main topic, just scouting, awareness, and preparation. In 2001, when the disease started earlier, like this year, two applications could provide a good return on investment, but that's only happened in a couple of research trials when they've gone out, according to the researcher from Purdue Crop Pathology. So if it gets in that early, the VTAN application may be worth it, but either way, that's something that may be holding on till tassel is going to be better. There's just not enough research to show that it's definitely going to be a good return on investment for that two pass. So properly timing that application is going to be the biggest thing that you want to watch for. Keep an eye on the conditions, talk to your scouts, and watch the weather. I mean, if it's above 75% humidity, then the risk is that much greater. So
I think the biggest drive home here is that VT or tassel time, which is one of the easiest growth stages to tell.
Yep, yes.
That's going on. Like,
don't have to count collars and leaves.
No, you can see it from the road. So once that hits, you got to a brown silk, which is also a pretty easy one to tell. That, and even here it shows you could go into R3 or later even. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a lateness to it. I don't know on corn silage that we'd want to push it that late. But yep. But either way, like I said, at least from the average farm, we'll be able to tell when it tassels. So that's a big thing to keep watching now as it's tasseling and try to time that out.
Yep. All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So as yesterday was the 4th of July, and I'm sure you've heard it for years and on your farm and multiple people saying it, but knee high by the 4th of July. It's where we want to be, right? And this year some guys aren't going to be there, unfortunately, but there's still enough corn that's at least knee high. Some of it's, I mean, I've been in stuff that's chest high already. So sometimes in the same field, it's between ankle and chest. But why do we say that? Why is it the 4th of July? Why does 4th of July really matter? So it's not the goal. It's the minimum you want to achieve. And so one of the earliest times the knee high saying has appeared in writing was the Sumner Gazette on July 3rd, 1884. It's been considered that if corn was knee-high by the 4th of July, that the crop was sure and safe, the paper said. According to that rule, most of the corn will get there. 10 years later, the Gazette reported the corn was mostly weed-free and would be well past knee-high on the 4th, adding, "There will be very few fields indeed that will not be well up to the sides of the horses by that date." So corn that was knee-high by early July was considered likely to mature properly and yield an average harvest come late summer and early fall. The corn was shorter than expected by this date. It signaled potential issues such as poor soil condition, inadequate rainfall, too much rainfall, or pest infestations, prompting farmers to take necessary remedial actions. Seems that the saying is always the goal and not the minimum. And now I know I've seen some articles on this too where they talk about that's even knee high is a problem if your corn hasn't reached that level by the 4th of July, because, I mean, we were planting earlier and earlier, it seems, every year, and or trying to anyway. Guys are always kind of pushing that envelope, and, you know, UW research was always May 1st, kind of that was your ideal starting time, and then they'd talk about yield loss and stuff past that. But a lot of guys are planting corn in April now, if they can, the conditions are right, so...
I do love this, Matt, that because there's always those years of guy like farmers being frustrated that people would even say it, kind of. And mm-hmm. for a while on Facebook, or now still on Facebook, people post pictures of their kids, which is cool, you know, next to corn, and
yep.
kind of say it's knee high and it's way over their head. And but I do think that's an interesting thing that the adage did start as kind of a like, hey, if you don't reach this, you got a problem,
right?
And I think it actually somewhat holds somewhat true today yet, that, like,
yeah,
you know, this is a good week to analyze, like, if your corn isn't knee-high, it's probably going to be corn silage, something to, like, it's probably not going to make it.
Right.
To grain, to, you know.
Yeah, to dry.
Right. So I thought that was a very interesting tale that I always thought, too, that it used to be the goal, or excuse me, like, that you know, back in the day, they'd be like, oh, it's knee-high, that's great. But even reading this Iowa newspaper, it wasn't necessarily it was great. It was
you better be knee-high.
It is the minimum. So, yeah, yep. I thought that was interesting. So thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe and tell a farmer friend. It's really easy. Just search Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or on your Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can get all your favorite podcasts. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcasts. You can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll get into our cool beans. That's corny, and some current events. So cool beans.
Cool beans.
Cool beans. Our cool beans this week, Farm Rescue, which is a company we talked about on the podcast before, has added Wisconsin to its service area.
So, thank you.
Yay.
It's good to hear. We did it. We need you.
Yeah, we might need it more than ever.
Yes.
So Farm Rescue announced it's adding Wisconsin to the growing list of states where it provides assistance for farmers in need. Headquartered in Horace, North Dakota, Farm Rescue is a nonprofit organization that provides free planting, haying, harvesting, commodity hauling, and livestock feeding assistance to farmer families experiencing a major illness, injury, or natural disaster. Operations in Wisconsin will begin with harvest assistance as of July 1st. That will be followed in 2025 with the addition of planting, haying, commodity hauling, and livestock feeding support. These services will be available to eligible farm families across Wisconsin. So Farm Rescue is very thankful for the unwavering support from our family of supporters in helping us grow our service area, according to Farm Rescue founder and president Bill Gross. Well, we look forward to extending a helping hand to farm families in crisis within the state of Wisconsin. The expansion was made possible by donations from several major donors and business sponsors. They include John Deere, Anheuser-Busch through its Busch Light brand, and Nutrien Ag Solutions.
Busch Light.
So Busch Light for the farmers, yep. Man. That's their slogan.
Be good. Yeah, for 4th of July, just drink some Busch Light to support Farm Rescue.
Get those corn cans. All right. And our That's Corny this week. Flooding across the Midwest may have wiped out up to 1 million acres of crops, according to new estimates. So portions of Iowa, South Dakota, and Nebraska are grappling with the aftermath of flooding while continuing to fight a swollen river. The Mississippi is facing flood threats, too. High waters and flooding are suffocating fields, causing crop damage to key growing areas across the Midwest. Crop consultant Michael Cordonier, PhD, says there have been 500,000 to 1 million U.S. corn acres lost due to flooding. He believes harvested acres will be 90.3 to 90.7% of plantings this year, down from an average of 91.3%, so up to a 1% loss there. Corn acres won't be replanted at this stage. He adds that planting soybeans this late would be a risky proposition, as they would flower while the crop is in early development, resulting in low yield potential. Flooding isn't over either. 18 river gauges along the Mississippi are at major flood stage, and a high river level along the Missouri River remains a concern as more rain is forecast during the next 10 days. So the Mississippi, man, that's been a wild roller coaster ride. Yeah. It's too low, it's too high. We just can't.
No, there's no just right.
There's no evening that out. No. So.
No, it'll be like there's the adage, rain makes grain in a lot of the markets. And so that for them will always be interesting of like, it does seem like the markets are saying, nope, it's fine. We'll have enough grain. But, you know, sometimes there is too much rain too. Yes. So.
Yep. Yeah. So hopefully if you're listening, you're not experiencing any major flooding. I mean, we've had some minor flooding in fields, some water holes that have not been able to empty out, but we're fortunate we're not that close to a major river to flood our area, but
feel for those who are in that situation. So that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, Todd.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So this week we talked about the disease plan you should have for your crops and what to consider there. In our spotlight, we took a look at how to plan for fungicide timing on those crops. Ag History Minute, we talked about the history of knee-high by the 4th of July. In our Cool Beans, that's corny this week. Our Cool Beans was Farm Rescue adding Wisconsin to its service area. That's corny, the flooding that's occurring because of the heavy rainfall. So, thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.